His hometown newspaper suggests that the humble beginnings of pop artist Andy Warhol are worth revisiting because, like so many Americans born in the 20th century, he was the son of immigrants. His real name was Andy Urhola. His parents were Eastern European immigrants from the Carpathian Mountains just north of Transylvania. Andy's father traveled to America in the early 1900s and worked as a coal miner here in Pennsylvania. In 1900, Mr. Urhola returned to Eastern Europe and proposed to his future wife, who was one of 15 children. They married that year. In 1912, Mr. Urhola immigrated to America, leaving his bride behind. 9 years passed before she joined him in Pittsburgh in 1921. Their first son, Paul, was born in 1922. Their second son, John, arrived in 1925. Andy arrived in 1927. The family lived in a two-room tar paper shack. The family attended church at St. John Chrysostom Eastern Rite Russian Greek Catholic Church, which was 2 miles from their home. By 1934, the family moved into the lower Oakland area, a step up from the working-class neighborhood of Soho, where they began. When he was 10, Andy's fifth-grade teacher recommended him for Saturday art classes at the Carnegie Museum. That's where he came under the profound influence of Joseph C. Fitzpatrick, a legendary art teacher. Andy's father worked for the John Eichley Company, which moved houses and did construction. But he knew his youngest son had talent and set aside $1,500 in a postal bond for Andy to go to college. Papa died in 1942, 7 years before Andy moved to New York City to make his name and leave an indelible impression on the art world. That from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in May 2014. Andy Warhol, 15 Minutes from Image to Icon, is a new show at a new gallery. In fact, it's the inaugural show in a brand new gallery as the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University opens in its new location on South Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. There will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony and opening reception this Friday, and the public is invited to join in the celebration. Heather Sienkiewicz is gallery director and curator of the exhibition. She paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about Andy Warhol and about the Sordoni Gallery.
The Sordoni Gallery has had a place on Wilkes University's campus now for 44 years. And that's quite a legacy. You know, we have had some wonderful shows over those number of years. And within the past 5 years or so, once President Leahy came on board, he was really looking at all of the organizations within campus and looking at ways to help. And in doing so, he looked at the Sordoni Gallery and he was thinking that it was an underutilized aspect of the university. So he developed a strategy as to how to best spotlight the arts on campus and make it more accessible for public. So it really came out to where he had decided to create a new space for it. A space right in downtown Wilkes-Barre, you know, right there on South Main Street with parking, and also be able to kind of create the funds for us to bring high profile, excellent exhibitions to the space itself. So it's very, very exciting time for, you know, the gallery here at Wilkes.
If a gallery is being created in 2017, it will be differently conceived, will it not, from the way a space was conceived 44 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly quite expansive, number one, but we've taken the measures to ensure the safety of the artwork, the security of the artwork. And not to say that it wasn't secure and safe before, but we've really gone to the extent that we possibly could to make sure that all of that is just being displayed in the best way possible. And for those institutions lending to us, we can ensure that we're taking care of their artwork. I think that allows us to bring in more substantial work as well, which is great.
When you think about a gallery designed for life 2017 and beyond, are there things you take into consideration, such as digital capabilities and things that weren't au courant?
Yeah, there is some of that. I think there's also the idea that it's a more flexible space. I think in the past, it was, I guess, conceived more traditionally. And now we're able to, we have interior modular walls. I mean, we're able to really re-envision how it's laid out every time we approach an exhibition. We're able to kind of facilitate much larger works, heavier works, or installation works. That's really fantastic. And, you know, I've been working with the IT staff on campus that have been really wonderful in helping on the digital end of things, being able to bring in sort of multimedia types of aspects to our exhibitions. So, yeah, I think we're looking at a new way, a more versatile way of showing artwork and having that gallery experience.
The gallery is in a building that has more in it than just the gallery. So how does that complex feed into the educational life of the school?
Yeah, you know, we're now in the new Carambellas Media Center, and the radio station is located there, the TV station is located there, the school newspaper is located there. So what's really exciting is that we're now this resource for content. And in the past, we hadn't necessarily been that. You know, just for this academic year, we've already have two articles in the Beacon. That's really exciting. You know, I think we maybe had two all of last year. I'm talking with the radio station in the next few weeks about our first exhibition. And we also are making arrangements to do a little bit with the TV station. So it's wonderful now to really be the source of content where students can really get the experience of producing content in a professional manner. And we're right there in that professional space. It's exciting.
And you had this wonderful challenge to create this space, to get it ready to open. How did you think about how are we going to inaugurate the space? What statement do we want to make with our first show here?
Yes, I mean, that was actually a topic of discussion for a long time. How are we going to open this space? And we obviously wanted to come out with a big splash, something that was going to be really exciting for not just art lovers, but also the community at large. So we were really looking for an artist or a theme that was really going to pull in a number of different kinds of audiences. And then it was really kind of funny where we threw around, Franz Kline. I mean, he's our hometown guy. That was an idea, and that's not something we're tossing away. It's something that's to come. But we've thought about other Pennsylvania artists. So that really kind of threw out the theme. And at one point, somebody said, you know, someone like Warhol. And it kept coming up. Someone like Warhol. And the funny thing about that is, like, finally, I just said, well, why not we just do Warhol? And symbolically, I really like that. Because we're looking at an artist that was at a time of great change in our country. And he was really reinventing how we look at art. And I think as a symbolic gesture of the Sordoni Gallery here in Wilkes-Barre, here in the northeastern Pennsylvania region, we're now an exhibition space that can show things in a new way of looking at art. So symbolically, that's why I really love the idea of Warhol, not to mention to the fact that he's a highly recognizable name. So we have that draw, but for me, thematically, that's what hit it for me.
You can approach someone like Warhol from many different angles. So what is the approach of this particular show?
Yeah, yeah. And that was actually a decision as to how I was going to look at this. So there's so much work, number one. Number two, I really started to look at the man and really kind of getting to know his childhood in a way. He's an Eastern European son of an immigrant family. So he has those roots, and he's somebody that was always aspiring to belong. And that's, you know, something a little bit more humanizing, I think, about him, because as we sort of see him as the artist, he was maybe a little bit more aloof. But as a person, I started to think about this young boy who's very shy, wanted to belong to something much bigger, the American dream, really. So he spent a good amount of time as a child writing Hollywood starlets to have sign headshots. Talk about like wanting to belong to something. He learned to draw from his mother, you know, so that's actually a nice, lovely touch to his family itself. But his mother was a huge influence. He will say that was the single most largest influence on his career was his mother. So there was such a loving, you know, connection with that. But I'm really looking at where all that kind of came from and then how he started to emerge as the artist. And not many people know, he was quite successful as a commercial designer prior to that, awarded and everything. So when that became not enough, he started to look at fine art, and he was looking at it away. This is at a time abstract expressionism is huge. Jackson Pollock is the guy, you know? And he started to approach his commercial roots and bring it to fine art painting. I mean, we see very early images of the Coke bottle where he's applying the drippy abstract mark to it. And so he did one that way. He also did one that was very, very clean. And he got some criticism on that, some feedback. And somebody said, well, this abstract expressionist mark thing doesn't make any sense. So he took that to heart and he moved forward and he started using his commercial roots, looking at the everyday objects. So going around, knowing that he's looking to belong to this American dream and looking at what he's going to access for imagery, he starts in on the Campbell soup can. Now, this is actually, it hits home for me because he loved Campbell's because every time he would open a can of soup, he always knew what he was going to get. And from the limited means that he had when he was a young boy, that was a treat. And the fact that this boy who is kind of outside of things is now belonging to this global thing of Campbell's, that's a huge symbol for him to kind of bring in and really honor for himself. So he's bringing his mark and looking at belonging in a way. Then we really look at, we're at a time where advertising is starting to come into our living rooms. And he's very much was a part of that. But now he's looking at how we are sort of changing how we look at food. And if we think about it, food has this long tradition in art history being painted. He's just looking at it a whole different way. So, so cool.
Does he write about these thoughts?
Yes, he kept a diary. It was mostly for someone tracking his taxes to his accountant. But he did keep a diary, and he also kept a tape recorder, which he called his wife. So there's a lot of documentation around his thoughts about things. Plus, he really liked feedback. He talked a lot with other people about his ideas, and he had no qualms with saying, I was talking, like with Campbell's soup, that came from a conversation with the interior designer Muriel Letoe. And I mean, she had said to him, you should just paint something that everybody knows, like a soup can. And he took it and ran.
Where is the work in the show coming from?
A number of different places. So I've borrowed from a number of institutions as a result of the Andy Warhol Legacy Collection. Dickinson College, University of Maine Presque Isle, which is where I was from, Haverford College, University of Northern Iowa, the Maslow Collection at Marywood University, and then the Warhol Museum itself. So, and we have a few private collection things because the work isn't entirely Warhol. There's also some work that was inspired by him. So we have work from Greg Gorman, who was an Interview magazine photographer. And we have work from Henry Leutweiler, which is a brand new piece done in 2016.
He's had a tremendous impact on what's come.
That isn't entirely correct. So the sort of the thesis of the show was looking at his work and what influenced what he made, then looking at what he made, and then in turn how what he made influenced us, influenced culture, influenced the fine arts. So yeah, there's this cyclical thing that's happening, and that's what I wanted to really drive home.
Is there a particular image in the show that we might not know?
Yes, I think some of the lesser known pieces are the ladies and gentlemen pieces. And this was kind of later in his career when he was kind of more into the business of art. So he's doing a good amount of vanity portraits of the time. So I have a number of Polaroids that he took of the social elite who could afford a seating with him. And then in turn, he would create portraits of them, that much like the Marilyn Monroes and the Liz Taylors and all that sort of stuff. So I have a good number of those portraits. So some people you'll recognize, some you might not, but we have a lot of context as to who these people are. But at that same time, he was also doing these ladies and gentlemen portraits of transvestites, people who didn't necessarily have the means to pay for a portrait, but he thought was very warranted to also have their portrait done. So it was a bit of a political statement by him, and I have two of those to show, which is great.
What's the range of media?
They're primarily prints, so I have mostly screen prints. We do have a good amount of the Polaroids. And then we have some of the screen tests. We have some of the films, which are what we received from the Andy Warhol Museum. I was pretty excited about those.
And you have events around the exhibition that will help us and inform us and open our eyes even more.
Correct, yeah. So I've developed the Warhol Wednesday lecture series, and I'll lead it off with a curator's tour. So it can kind of give people the insight as to like what the approach was and provide some context while being straight in the gallery, comparing and contrasting, you know, kind of what's going on and the sort of the journey of how I've laid it out. So, you know, I'll start things off, but on October 25th, we have Dr. Benjamin Cahan coming in from Louisiana State University. Now, he's talking about Andy Warhol's image. It's called Andy Warhol is a V, the Philosophical Bachelorhood and the Celibate Factory. So, you know, I could have easily brought in an art historian, but that's okay, and that there's nothing wrong with not bringing them, but I wanted to bring in something that maybe was a layer that we didn't know so much about. So looking at how celebrities have used their sexuality as part of their image, and Andy Warhol is very much a part of that. So Dr. Cahan will talk a lot about what he calls the celibate factory. So, you know, Warhol we know was gay. However, he kept his image pretty private and his relationships very private. So we're looking at how that was all constructed. He's a very interesting scholar. He teaches in the English and Women and Gender Studies program down at LSU. So that's pretty exciting. And then we have Dr. Elaine Rusinko coming in, and her lecture is called Andy and the Rusins. So it's being co-sponsored by the Carpathian and Rusin Society here in northeastern Pennsylvania. And we're looking at his Eastern European immigrant roots. So she's coming on in, and she's going to be talking about his family ties and how that influenced his image.
Has there been anything that you've been surprised about in pulling together this show that you might have known, you had a glimmer, but this has really concretized something for you, more insight-wise about him?
Yeah. For me, you know, I think I always saw Warhol with a lot of flash. And, you know, really kind of getting into, like, I think my favorite pieces in the show are the screen tests because they're so contemplative. And that was something that, you know, when you keep hearing a lot of his discussions and whatnot and like, yeah, I'll do Campbell soup cans. It didn't necessarily in the beginning seem to have the amount of depth that I knew of. And then him really kind of thinking about things as thoroughly as he did. I think his films in particular really, really make us stop and slow down. And that was something I really like because you read about the factory and you hear about sort of like the atmosphere where it's a lot of energy, a lot of stuff happening all at once. So it makes you imagine that there isn't a whole lot of time for thinking. But when you see some of the films such as Kiss or Empire, they just slow you down and really make you aware of what you're looking at. There's not a lot of like clutter to them. So I really love the contemplative nature to all of that work. And then kind of moving forward, I've known the flower images forever, and really reading more about those, they're a lot about mortality. And I was surprised. And so I have them spaced after the screen tests because featured in my screen test is Freddie Herko, and he was a good friend of Warhol's, and it was a figure at the factory who had jumped out of a window. It's thought that the flowers are a memorial to him. I mean, I got chills when I realized that this is what all of this meant to him. There's a lot more soul than I think a lot of people realize.
Pulling it all together, then, what are you hoping about this show?
I mean, I definitely feel as though this is an exhibition that people are excited about. And they are excited about it, but maybe they don't know the depth to it. And I've worked pretty closely with a research assistant on this to make it very interactive as well. So with some of the works, even we have QR codes that will link you to other information to really kind of give you a pretty full-bodied experience of Warhol. We're certainly not the Warhol Museum in Pittsburgh, but I think we're able to give you a very in-depth kind of experience And I think too, you know, I teach, so I see students who constantly have their phones right there. So I think in that way, it's quickly accessible to get more information about a lot of the content that's there.
What about a website now developed to complement not just this exhibit, but the gallery itself?
Yes, we're on the Wilkes site. So it's www.wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery. So that gives you a bit of an outline as to what our exhibitions are and some of the events that are complementing all of that. Part of our interactive piece of the exhibition is being built out on our website as well. So a lot of the times when you get to the QR code, it's actually linking you back to some of our content.
And how long will the show be there?
So we open on October 6th and we'll run until December 20th. So, you know, you've got a good amount of time to come on in. We'll be open for limited hours over the Thanksgiving weekend as well, which is in the past what we haven't always been able to do. But check the website for those hours because we're still working that out.
Heather Sienkiewicz, assistant professor, gallery director, and curator of the exhibition. She was speaking with us about Andy Warhol, 15 minutes from image to icon, running October 6th through December 20th at the Sordoni Art Gallery, the new Sordoni Art Gallery in its location on South Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. There will be a ribbon-cutting ceremony and an opening reception for the show this Friday, October 6th, and you are invited to attend. The ribbon-cutting ceremony will get underway at 4:30. The opening reception will run from 5 to 7. As we heard, for more information on the web, wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery. And Sordoni is spelled S-O-R-D-O-N-I. And then there will be the Warhol Wednesday Lecture Series, 4:30 each time they're held. And that's in KC Room 135. 11th of October is the inaugural lecture, and that will be a curator's tour with our guest today, Heather Sienkiewicz, director of the Sordoni Art Gallery and curator of the exhibition, and that will be held in the gallery itself. Then there will be visits from academic experts October 25th and November 15th. And for more details, it's wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery. And this exhibition is the inaugural show in the new space, the Sordoni Art Gallery, and that's on South Main Street in downtown Wilkes-Barre, the new Carambellis Media Center. And for more information on the web, wilkes.edu/Sordoni Art Gallery.